Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I am Jerry, and I am an alcoholic.
I am Jerry.
By the grace of God, Alcoholics Anonymous, good sponsorship. My sobriety date is May 17th, 1958. And I have had the privilege and honor of participating and being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous for 49 years. And I never had it so good. I can't believe that I have been so blessed. And, you know, I only have one story. I can't change it. Many of you have heard it many times, and many of you haven't. But if I can carry the message to one person in this room tonight, and there is something that I can say that will keep you coming back, then God has blessed me once again. I'm an only child. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. My dad was never there, because I didn't know till I was 25 years old that I was an illegitimate child. And I grew up with my grandmother and my grandfather and my aunts and uncles. And my mother was never there. She didn't have a drinking problem. She had a man problem. And so she was always gone. And there were always new daddies in my life. Being an only child, I spent a lot of time in my room. I read a lot. I wrote a lot. And I didn't function well, even as a child out there. My grandfather was an alcoholic. And we had many, many sessions with him coming home drunk, falling in the bushes, 10 feet of snow, yelling for one of us to come out and get him. Sometimes the holidays were very, very good, and sometimes they were very, very difficult. You know, my mother finally, when I was 12 years old, she married a man. She met him on a train going somewhere and came home and said to my grandmother, "I'm taking Jerry to Alaska. I've met someone." And my grandmother says, "You have got to be out of your mind. You cannot take that child to Alaska." And my mother did. And so we went, oh God, in 1948, it was not a jet we went in. It was a very scary airplane. And I remember praying all the way to Alaska. I had no idea where I was going. And we got to Alaska. My dad was in the service. And so I attended junior high school in Anchorage. And it was quite an adventure, but I was young. And I finally had some stability in my life. My stepfather adopted me as soon as he and my mom were married, and I had a pretty good life. My mother didn't change that much. She was an alcoholic that never took a drink. very, very, very dysfunctional. And so we left Anchorage and went to Fort Walton Beach, Florida. And I was 16 years old. And I never made many friends because we were never in one place that long. And so I stayed to myself. But I was very popular. And we got to Fort Walton Beach. And things started happening in my life. I was the head cheerleader. I was homecoming queen 2 years in a row. I was in the Miss Northwest Florida beauty pageant, made it to the finals, and got to the 12 finalists, and got eliminated because I was only 17 years old. But even then, with all these good things happening in my life, I sabotaged it because I was full of fear. I was insecure. I never felt good enough. I never felt like I deserved anything. So my dad got stationed once again. We left Florida. And my dad got stationed in Okinawa, Japan. So my mom and I returned to Omaha, Nebraska, where I had grown up. And once again, we lived with my grandmother. And I went to a Catholic high school. I went to Catholic schools all of my life until we went to Alaska and Fort Walton Beach, Florida, because there weren't any Catholic schools there. So I was taught by the Jesuits, and they were very stern disciplinarians. And I went to Mass every day. I said all those prayers I was supposed to say. And things went along pretty good. At the age of 18, I met my husband-to-be. He was already a practicing alcoholic. And I swear to God, there could have been 50 men in the room the night I met him, and I would have went straight to him. He was so exciting. He was Irish. He was Catholic. He was, oh, just wonderful. And my mom made me promise that I would graduate before we got married. And before I graduated, I knew there was something wrong. This man would promise to pick me up. He wouldn't show up. All kinds of things happened. And I thought, all he needs is a little love. And I can do that. And everything will be wonderful. We'll have that beautiful home and kids, and I will love him so much. He won't drink anymore. Well, needless to say, the drinking progressed until I found myself with three little children. He had taken off. He used to go to union meetings, and he was the president of the union. And when he'd go to these union meetings, he'd disappear for 2-3 months, a week, 2 weeks. I get calls from all over. And I have these three children, these babies, and I never drank because I could see what alcohol was doing to our family and to me. So I never picked up a drink. And Jerry disappeared, and nobody knew where he was. He was gone for over 10 months. And that's when I found alcohol. And I was an alcoholic before I ever picked up that drink. And my drunk-a-log is not that long. I made it 2 years. And in that 2 years, when I picked up that drink, something magic happened. And I felt this warm feeling inside, and I felt good, and I wasn't bashful, and I wasn't shy anymore. I could mix with people. I found the magic. And so I started drinking. And in that 2 years, I made the jail. I made the psychiatric ward. My children were, neglected. I did all those things that women alcoholics do. And the first time I found myself in jail, it was a horrible experience. And what I did is I didn't drink at home. I went out where the action was because I loved to party, and I was looking so good and wanted everybody to know what a wonderful woman this was. Well, I used to go to this bar. It was next to an army base, and there were a lot of soldiers in there, a lot. And that song, The Stripper, came on. And I just got up and started taking it off. I was having so much fun. And what happened is the soldiers wanted more. And they started breaking the tables and breaking the chairs. And they came and got me and hauled me to jail. And I was in blackout. So I came to, and I said to the jailer, you know, they put that food through that little thing there. And I looked at it. Oh, my God, it looked awful. And I said to him, pardon me, sir, could you tell me why I'm in here? And he says, well, lady, you'll find out when you go to court in the morning. And here I am. I have never been that scared in my life. And I went before the judge, and he read these numbers and what the charges were. And it was for inciting a riot and disturbing the peace. Well, anyway, I didn't have any family I could call. My parents were in Crete, Greece. I did not want my beloved grandmother to know that I was in this mess. So the judge released me, and I was set free. And when I left, I said, dear God, I will never drink again. And my intentions were good. I really had the sincerity like no one else had. But I'm an alcoholic. And the most natural thing for an alcoholic to do is to drink. So I got home, and these three little children, the neighbors took care of them. Nobody knew where I was. And I got up the next morning, and of course, I started drinking again. And I was drinking in the morning. And it's just, alcoholism is a progressive disease. And it always gets worse. It never gets better. I have asked so many people in Alcoholics Anonymous that have gone back out. I ask them, what happened? Why did you do it? And I say, did it get better? In 49 years, no one has ever told me it got better. Then I asked, did you ask for help before you picked up that drink? No one has ever told me. Yes, they ask God for help, even if it's only help me. They picked up the phone. They asked their sponsor for help. They asked another alcoholic for help. No one in 49 years has ever told me that, yes, they did. So I know what the answer is, and I know where the solution is. Anyway, my drinking progressed, and I got in a lot more trouble. So I went and I signed a pledge with the priest, and that you go down and you sign this pledge that you will not drink for 6 months, 5 months, whatever. And I would sign my name, no, Father, I won't drink again. I made this pledge to you and to God. And guess what? I'd get out and do it again and again. Those ABCs that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he is sought. And there was no human power could relieve my alcoholism. My children couldn't do it. The priest couldn't do it. Nobody could do it. And I didn't know what the problem was. It was 1958. Nothing was known about alcoholism. The American Medical Association had not even acknowledged it as a disease. And my picture of the alcoholic was somebody under a bridge in a dark coat with a bag, a bottle in a paper bag. Well, my life became so unmanageable, and there was so much insanity in it. My husband returned to Omaha and knocked at the front door, and I let him in, and he said, Jerry, he said, I've got the answer. We're moving to California. There's so much to do there, so many beautiful ocean and fishing, and we won't have to drink anymore. And we packed up, put everything in the house because they were foreclosing on it. I was losing it anyway, and we took off, and Jerry didn't drink, and we stopped somewhere, and I said, I'm going to have a beer, and he didn't say anything about it, and I just thought, I'm not an alcoholic, he's the alcoholic, and so we got to California, and I had these three children. And that's when I hit my bottom. The drinking started again. It was weekend partying. I was drinking every day. And one Monday I came to and I looked at the devastation around me. It had been a 3-day party, broken tables, cigarette butts and the beer and all the empty cans. And I looked at my children, and I saw the fear in their eyes. And I went in the bedroom, and I got on my knees, and I said, "Please, God, help me." And I got up, and I went to the table, and the want ads were open. And it said in there, "If you have a drinking problem, call this number." And that's what I did. And the lady said, "Have you drank today?" And I said, "No, I haven't had a drink today." And she said, "Don't drink, and we'll be up to pick you up at 7 o'clock for an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting." And I was so desperate, I didn't even question what it was. So I got dressed that night, and the two ladies came, and my husband came home in the meantime, and he saw me all dressed up, and he had been drinking, and he says, "Where in the hell are you going?" And I said, "I'm going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting." Well, of course, he didn't believe me. So he got the car, and he put it around the corner, and he watched. And these two old women came and got me, and I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and he followed me. And he had been drinking, and the men took him out and walked him. But I have to tell you, it wasn't a warm welcome. The man standing at the door looked at me, and he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm Jerry, and I think I have a drinking problem." And I still had a watch. And he says, "You still got a watch. You don't belong here." And I thought, "Oh my God." And that's what my husband wanted to hear. He didn't belong there. He was too young. And so he continued to drink for quite a while. And I didn't. I stayed. And you know, when they finally opened their hearts to me is when I was sitting in a chair at a Friday night meeting. And they pushed me out of the chair, and they said, "Jerry, you're going to tell your story tonight." And they had a podium like this in California, and I got up, and I told my story. And they welcomed me. They heard the story, and they knew I belonged. And today, there were two old women there like me. Today. And there were all these old men. And you didn't have to worry about a relationship. Because they were so old, they all looked like they were ready for the obituary part. And I was 23 years old. And thank God for that. Thank God. And they told me, "You gotta give up your playmates and your playthings." And I thought, "Oh my God, I'm doomed for the rest of my life. I'm gonna be sitting in a rocking chair, knitting like these two old ladies, and my life is over." But they gave me the foundation. They gave me a foundation built of rock. And those two old ladies stayed long enough for me to do my first five steps. And thank God for that. And anyway, I did that fourth and that fifth. And I had it written out, and I shared it. But there was one thing I thought, I can't tell this old lady that. She will never understand. And so I didn't tell her. And after I was finished, she sent me into the room to review the first 5 steps and make sure that I had been honest and thorough from the very start. Well, the longer I sat in that room, the more my stomach started churning. And I finally got up and I went out and I said, Sharon, there's something I have kept and haven't shared. And thank God I did that. Thank God I did that. It tells us in the big book that almost invariably we will get drunk if we don't do that 4th and 5th step. And I believe there is no secrets we can hide anymore. I believe that it has to be thorough and honest from the very start. And I'm so grateful that I shared that one thing. I thought I can share this with God, but I can't share it with another human being. My husband continued to drink for quite some time, but he would have period of sobriety. He would come, he would stay sober a year, he'd go back out, he'd come back in. He was that revolving door that we see over and over again because he didn't do the things that are suggested. He wasn't willing to go to any lengths. He had to hit that bottom, as all of us do. And the bottoms are different for each and every alcoholic. So I made AA, 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 and I was surrounded with a bunch of Al-Anons because in those days, we didn't have separate Al-Anon meetings. We were all one and a family. I used to take my kids with me to meetings, and the Al-Anon women were always with me. So life went on, and, you know, it has been quite a journey. And I never realized when I walked in the door of AA how sick I was. If I had had a clue, I might not have stayed because I was some sick woman. I only not had the alcohol problem. I had the Al-Anon problem. And I tried to fix and I tried to take care. And I drug the cross across the kitchen floor every day. The biggest victim in the world, telling everybody what that drunk was doing to me. And it didn't work. It didn't work. I just got sicker and sicker and sicker. So, you know, I don't understand the mystery of God's grace. I only know it picks me up where I am, and it never leaves me where it found me. In 1989, my husband had Lou Gehrig's disease, and he was given 1 to 5 years to live. At that time, he finally got it. He had 7 years of sobriety. But the doctor said we needed to move and have some quality in our lives. And all of our family were in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. The kids, the grandkids, all of them. So we sold everything we had, and I left my AA family and moved to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And I got to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and I thought, where in the hell am I? Idaho. I had never been there. I heard of it as the potato country, and here I am. And I've got big problems. Those boys, those three boys, two of them turned into practicing alcoholics. And it was really something. And when I was 19 years sober, I had been married 25 years, and my alcoholic went through a midlife crisis and on a 9-month drunk. And he bought a Harley Davidson, he dyed his hair red, and he had a young chick on the back. And it was the most painful experience of my life. And God, once again, in his mercy, picked me up and put me in a better place. By that time, there were three alcoholics. The boys were partying, drinking, the whole schmear. Jails, treatment centers, just constant telephone calls. I had to take the 16-year-old with me because he was a minor and I couldn't leave him there. But God got me a beautiful apartment, jacuzzi, tennis courts, and for the first time in my life, I started taking care of me. And I had called Chuck C. in Laguna Beach. We were dear, dear friends, he and Elsa. And I was in terrible pain. I couldn't function because everywhere I'd go, I'd see Jerry and that young chick on the back. And I thought I was going to die. My heart was broken. And I called Chuck C. and I told him. The boys were in and out of jail. One had split from the Marine Corps. He only had 3 months for his honorable discharge, but he was going to court for 3 DUIs, and he split and came home. I had sergeants calling me, all these people calling me, asking me to please talk him into coming back, and I couldn't do it. So they put out an APB on him. So I had a lot going on. And when I called Chuck, he said, Jerry, he said, you have got to get on your knees and surrender all of those alcoholics and let it go. And that's when, that night I surrendered and let those alcoholics in my life go, I started being good to me and taking care of me and healing. Well, Jerry finally sobered up, and I had gone through a divorce. I had been in divorce court many, many times, but I never got a final degree. This time, I got a final degree. So he sobered up, and then he was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease seven years later. And he was given 1 to 5 years to live, and we moved to Idaho. Once again, God in his mercy, I surrendered in the doctor's office. I said, please God, this is so heavy, I can't handle it. I give it to you, and I let it go. Miracles happen. We came to Idaho. My husband was too sick to get on the plane, and so, to drive with us. So my daughter-in-law came down to California, and she helped me drive, and one of my sons helped me drive, and I put Jerry on the plane, and we arrived. And I didn't know we had to find a house. I didn't even know where to look for a house. I was so heartsick. And I was at my son's house in Idaho, and the real estate man called, and he said, "Mrs. Mahoney, how many houses would you like to look at today?" And I said, "Oh, I'll try three or four." We went and looked at these houses, and we got to this one house, and I knew this is where I was meant to be. And the real estate man said, "There's another offer in them. Whoever qualifies first will get it." And he called, and we got the house. Now, it was winter. It was snowing. Everything was covered with snow. But when my daughter-in-law was in California getting us ready to move, my husband sat in his chair, and he said, "Honey, when I get to Idaho, I'm planting four trees, one for each one of the boys. And in between, I'm planting a rose for each one of the girls. And baby roses going up the tree for our first granddaughter." And she said, "Dad, I want yellow." And he named the other colors. When we got to Idaho, everything was covered in snow. And summer came, and my daughter-in-law went down to clear the yard, and she yelled, "My God, Mom, come down here." And I went tearing down the stairs, and right down the driveway were four trees. In between were the roses for my daughter-in-law's. Tammy's yellow rose was the first one behind the first tree, and the big tree were baby roses going up it for our granddaughter, Amber. And my husband did not pick up a shovel. He was not capable of planting anything. Once again, God in his mercy picked me up and left me in a better place. 7 months before my husband died, the son Terry, we had been in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. My husband and I started a meeting in Post Falls, Idaho, truly grateful group. And he had been in the meeting on a Thursday night with my husband and I. And he really wanted to stay sober, but he just couldn't. He knew his father was dying, and he wanted to stay sober for us. There again, you cannot stay sober for anybody but yourself. We left the meeting that night. It was the 4th of July weekend. He had 4 days off, had a girlfriend coming from Seattle, and he hugged us both, gave us a kiss, "Love you, Mom and Dad, see you tomorrow." About 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had a strange feeling that night. In fact, I got in my car, and I drove around Post Falls and checked all the bars to see if his blazer was there, and it wasn't. So I went to bed, and 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard this loud knock on the door, and I went down, and I opened the door, and two Washington state policemen were standing there. And they said, "Mrs. Mahoney?" I said, "Yes." And they said, "Is your husband home?" And I said, "Yes, but he's very, very ill." And they said, "You need to wake him up." And I thought, oh, I knew. So I went up and I got Jerry, and they told us that our son was dead. And, you know, only someone that has lost a child knows that pain. And I couldn't do my grieving because if my husband got emotionally upset, it affected his whole body. He would fall down. He would choke on his food. He would have breathing problems. So I stuffed it, and I stuffed it, and I stuffed it. 7 months later, my husband passed. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to live. But my husband taught me about dying. Because when he was leaving, we were all in the room, and he asked us to say the serenity prayer. And my sons and I held hands and said the serenity prayer. And his last words were, "Keep coming back. It works." And I went over and I whispered in his ear. I said, "Honey, it's time to let go. Terry is waiting for you." And I saw the peace that surpasses all understanding. The smile on his face and the light in his eyes were something I had never witnessed. So, you know, what do? You've lost your husband. You've lost your son all in 7 months. You've had two funerals. You people surrounded me with your love. You walked with me when I didn't think I could put one foot in front of the other. And I had not done my grieving, so I was in the grieving process. And I remember being on my knees and raising my fists and saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know what? He was carrying me. He never left me. He was carrying me through all of that pain and all of that darkness. And the beginning and the place he left me after I got through the grieving was such a spiritual experience. I was in that house. I wanted out of that house because everywhere I went, I had reminders. There was an ad in the paper for a college student. Now, mind you, I'm 50 years old. I answered the ad. It was to work out on this millionaire's home on Lake Quarter Lane, and you had to go by boat to get there. And I wrote him a letter, and I answered the ad. And guess what? The phone rang. It was Mr. Magnuson. He said, "Jerry, I have read your letter, and I have absolutely got to meet you." He said, "Come down to the resort, and I'll pick you up at the boat, in the boat, and we'll go across to the house and talk." That was the most incredible job I ever had in my life. The beauty, the flower gardens were in all the magazines. All these trails with benches that overlooked the lake. I could walk there. I had my own cottage, and I had a big swing. And I got in that swing, and I would swing every day to the top of the trees. I was able to let go and let God. And I could see how God was working in my life. You know, it's all about surrender and letting go and acceptance. Every one of those steps are about surrender and letting go and acceptance. The ride I have been on for 49 years has been incredible. Yes, I've had to deal with life on life's terms, but all of you have showed me how to do that. I still do the same things today that I did 49 years ago. I sponsor women. I read my big book. When you're sponsoring women, it keeps you in the big book and the 12x12. I chair meetings. I do everything that is asked of me in AA because they told me when I came in, you never say no to a request in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for that. Thank you all for showing me and giving me a way of life that has changed my life, I am so grateful to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe a debt of honor to Alcoholics Anonymous and to you to be the best example of this program that I can be, because I may be the only big book someone will ever see. And that 12 step says, in all of my affairs. That means at home, at work, at play, everywhere I go. So I want to thank you for inviting me once again to come and share with you my experience, strength, and hope. We're all in this dance of life together, and we're all dancing the same song. And it's an old song, and it's a slow song. And we embrace each other and hold each other tight. And you have embraced me and held me for 49 years. Thank you, and God bless all of you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.